They arrived at the classroom's arched wooden door. Evie stepped inside and made her way to the nearest open desk, smiling at those who came to gather curiously around her. Everyone was looking at her with such awe and admiration. She seemed to be making waves. The desk she'd chosen had a remarkably large cauldron and a great view of the professor's lectern. She took a seat, and there was a gasp in the crowd. Wow, these kids sure were easy to please. Evie was feeling pretty good about her first day, until she heard the sound of a throat clearing. When she looked up, there was a pretty, purple-haired girl standing in front of her cauldron, staring at her with unmistakable venom. Her mother's mirror would have had a few choice words about this one, that's for sure. Evie felt a cold red as the memory of a certain infamous party came flooding back. Maybe if she played dumb and flattered her, the girl wouldn't remember what had happened 10 years ago. It was worth a shot. I'm Evie. What's your name? Evie asked innocently, although she knew exactly who was standing in front of her. And by the way, that jacket is amazing. It looks great on you. I love all the patchwork leathers on it. Girl, that's her cauldron. You should bounce. A student Evie would find out later was named Isla whispered loudly. Oh, this is yours? Evie asked the purple-haired girl. The purple-haired girl nodded. I had no idea this was your desk. I'm so sorry. But it has such a great view of the lectern. Evie said with her trademarked bright smile, so blinding it should have come with sunglasses. Evie finally realized why the students had been staring at her. They had been watching a train wreck about to happen. Yes, it does. The purple-haired girl replied, her voice soft and menacing. And if you don't move your blue-haired caboose out of it, you'll get some kind of view, all right. She snarled, brusquely brushing past Evie and noisily plunking her backpack down into the middle of the cauldron. Evie got the message, grabbed her things, and found an empty cauldron in the back of the classroom behind a column where she couldn't see the blackboard. Is that who I think it is? She asked the small boy seated next to her, whose hair was black at the roots but white at the tips. Actually, everything he wore was black and white with a splash of red. A fur-collared jacket with one black and one white side and red leather sleeves, a black button-down shirt with streaks of white, and long shorts with one white and one black and white leg. It was a pretty cool look. For a bloody skunk. If you mean Mal, you're right. I would stay out of her way if I were you, he said. Mal, Evie breathed, her voice trembling nervously. Yeah, her mom's the big bad around here. You know. He made horn signs with his hands on either side of his head. You didn't need to have lived on the Isle for long to know exactly whom he was talking about. Nobody dared speak her name, not unless it was absolutely necessary. Evie gulped. Her first day, and she'd already made the worst enemy in school. It was Maleficent, who had banished Evie and her mother 10 years ago and caused Evie to grow up alone in a faraway castle. Her own mother might be called Evil Queen, but everyone on the Isle of the Lost knew that Maleficent wore the crown in these parts. From the looks of it, Her daughter did the same in the dungeons of Dragon Hall. Magic mirror on the wall? Who's the stupidest of them all? Chapter 4. A Smart Little Boy. Carlos Deville looked up from the contraption he was assembling and shot the new girl a shy smile. "It'll be okay. Mal just likes to be left alone," he said. "She's not as tough as she seems. She only talks a big game." "She does? What about you?" the blue-haired princess asked. "I don't have a game. Unless you consider getting beat up and pushed around a game, which in a way I guess it is. Really, it's not that entertaining, unless you happen to be the one doing the beating and the pushing." Carlos turned his attention back to the mess of wires in front of him. He was smaller and younger than the rest of the class, but smarter than most of them. He was an AP student, an advanced penchant for evil. It was only right, since the infamous Cruella was his mother. His mother was so notorious, she had her own song. He hummed it under his breath sometimes. What? It was catchy. Sometimes he would do it just to send her into hysterics. Then again, that wasn't so difficult. Cruella's witch doctors believed she was sustained by pure metabolic fury. Privately, Carlos thought of it as her rage diet. No carbs, just barbs. No hunger, just anger. No ice cream, just high screams. His thoughts were interrupted by his friendly new seatmate. "I'm Evie. What's your name?" she asked. "Hi, Evie. I'm Carlos Deville," he said. "We met once before at your birthday party." He'd recognized her the minute she walked in. She looked exactly the same, just taller. "Oh, sorry. I don't remember much about the party, except how it ended." Carlos nodded. "Yeah. Anyway, I'm also your neighbor. I live just down the street in Hell Hall." "You do?" Evie's eyes went wide. "But I thought no one lived there but that crazy old lady and her..." "Don't say it," he blurted. "Dog?" she said at the same time. Carlos shuddered. We don't have dogs," he said weakly, feeling his forehead begin to perspire at the very thought. His mother had told him dogs were pack animals, the most dangerous and terrifying animals on Earth. "But she's always calling someone her pet. I thought you were a... I told you, don't say it," warned Carlos. "That word is a trigger for me." Evie put up her hands. "Okay, okay." Then she winked. "But how do you fit in that crate at night?" Carlos only glared. The first class was Selfishness 101, or Selfies for short, taught by Mother Gothel, who took way too many self-portraits of herself with an old Polaroid camera. The photos were littered around the classroom, Mother Gothel making a duck face, sleepy-eyed Mother Gothel in an "I woke up like this" pic, Mother Gothel in cobra pose. But Mother Gothel herself was nowhere to be found. She was always at least a half hour late. And when she finally arrived, she was irritated to find the students there before her. "Have I taught you nothing about being fashionably annoyingly late to every engagement?" she asked, letting out an exasperated sigh and collapsing dramatically into her chair, one hand fanned over her eyes. For the next half hour or so, they studied portraits of evil, comparing the likenesses of the most famous villains in history, many of whom lived on the island, and some of whom were their parents. Today's class just happened to feature Cruella de Vil. Of course, Carlos knew the portrait by heart, whether or not he was looking at it. His mother. There she was, in all her finery, with her tall hair and her long red car, her eyes wild and her furs flying in the wind. He shuddered again and went back to tinkering with his machine. Class ended, and students began to file out of the classroom. Evie asked Carlos what his next subject was, and looked happy to discover they both had Lady Tremaine for evil schemes.
That's another advanced class.
You must have a really high EQ, he told her.
Only those who boasted off-the-charts evil quotients were allowed to take it.
It's this way, he said, motioning up the stairs. But before they could get too far, a cold voice cut through the chatter. Why, if it isn't Carlos Deville, it said behind them. Carlos would know that voice anywhere. It was the second most terrifying on the island. When he turned, Mal was standing right behind him, next to Jay. Carlos automatically checked his pockets to make sure nothing had disappeared.
Hey, Mal, he said, trying to appear nonchalant. Mal never spoke to anyone except to scare them or to complain that they were in her way.
What's up?
Your mom's away at the spa this weekend, isn't she? Mal asked, elbowing Jay,
who snickered.
Carlos nodded. The spa. Really just a bit of warmish steam escaping from the crags of rock in the ruined basement of what had once been a proper building was Cruella's one bit of comfort, her one reminder of her luxurious past. How far the DeVilles had fallen, just like the rest of the isle.
Yes, he said uncertainly. Unsure if that was the correct answer, even though it was the truthful one.
Right answer, Mal said and patted him on the head. I can't exactly give a party at my place without my mother yelling at everyone, not to mention the whole flying crockery issue. Carlos sighed. Like the rest of the isle, he knew parties brought out Maleficent's worst behavior. There was nothing she hated more than people openly having fun.
We can't have it at Jay's because his dad will just try to hypnotize everyone into being his servants again, Mal continued.
Totally, agreed Jay.
Carlos nodded again, although he wasn't sure where this was leading.
Great. Perfect. Party at your house. Tonight.
Party? At his house? Did he hear that right? Wait, what? Tonight? He blanched. I can't have a party. I mean, you should understand, my mom doesn't really like when people come over, and, I've got a lot of work to do. I have to fluff her furs, iron her undergarments, and scrape her bunions. I mean,
he gulped, embarrassed.
Mal ignored him. Spread the news. Hell Hall's having a hellraiser. She seemed to warm to the thought. Get the word out. Activate the twilight bark, or whatever it is you puppies do.
Bow wow, barked Jay with a laugh.
Carlos glared at the two of them in spite of himself.
There's a party? Evie asked shyly.
Carlos had forgotten she was standing right next to him, and he jumped at the sound of her voice.
Eavesdrop much? Mal said, snarling at her, although it was obvious Evie couldn't help it, as she was standing right there.
Before Evie could protest, Mal sighed.
Of course there is. The party of the year.
A real rager. Didn't you hear?
Mal looked her up and down and shook her head sadly.
Oh, I guess he didn't hear. She mock-winced, looking at Carlos conspiratorially. Everyone's gonna be there.
They are? Carlos looked confused.
But you only just told me to have it. He quickly got the message.
Everyone, he agreed.
Evie smiled. Sounds awesome. I haven't been to a party in a long, long time.
Mal raised an eyebrow.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a very exclusive party, and I'm afraid you didn't get an invitation. With those parting words, Mal went ahead of them into the classroom. She was in their next class, too. Of course, her EQ was legendary, and left them to each other.
Sorry, Carlos mumbled. I guess I was wrong. Mal doesn't just talk a big game.
Yeah, me too, Party sounds like fun, Evie said sadly. You want to see what I'm making? He asked, trying to change the subject as they settled into their seats. He took out of his bag a black box with wires and an antenna poking out from one side, the same contraption he'd been fiddling with earlier. I made it from some old magician stuff.
Sure, Evie smiled. Hey, is that a power core? It looks like you're making a battery, right?
Carlos nodded, impressed.
Yeah. What does it do?
Can you keep a secret? He asked, whispering. Evie nodded. I keep them from my mom all the time. I'm trying to poke a hole in the dome.
Really? Can you do that? I thought it was invincible.
Well, I thought I could maybe try to get a signal with this antenna here. With this old wand, I think if I hit the right frequency, we might be able to bring some of the outside world into the dome. And we can watch something other than that hairy old beast king telling us to be good, or that channel that only sells shackles.
I sort of like the Auradon channel, Evie said dreamily. Especially when they feature the Prince of the Week. They're so dreamy.
Carlos snorted. She looked from the boy to the battery.
Frequency? But how?
I'm not sure, but I think if I can break through the dome, we'd be able to pick up Auradon's radio waves. You know, internet and Wi-Fi signals. I'm not exactly sure what the frequency is, but I think that's how they get all those channels and stuff.
Evie sighed again. What I'd give to go to Auradon. I've heard that everything is so beautiful there.
I guess. If you're into that kind of thing, Carlos said.
He didn't care about princes or enchanted lakes or chirping animals or cheerful dwarves. What he did care about was discovering more of the online world, a safe virtual refuge. Where he'd heard you could even find people with whom you could play video games. That sounded like fun, as he never had anyone to play with. There had to be something more to life than kowtowing to the cool kids, organizing his mother's fur coats, and hiding from her tantrums. There had to be. Although, right now it wasn't just his mother he had to answer to. If Mal was serious, which it looked like she was. In the next few hours, he somehow had to figure out how to throw the party of the year. Chapter 5. And a handsome prince who lived far, far away. Meanwhile, across the Sea of Serenity, which separated the Isle of the Lost from the rest of the world, lay the USA, the United States of Auradon, a land of peace and enchantment, prosperity and delight, which encompassed all the good kingdoms. To the east lay the colorful domes of the Sultan's Seat, where Aladdin and Jasmine lived, not far from where Mulan and Li Shang guarded the Imperial Palace. To the north was Charming Castle, owned by Cinderella and her king, next door to Honeymoon Cottage, the 40-bedroom palace that Aurora and Philip called home. And to the south, one could spy the lanterns of Rapunzel and Eugene Fitzherbert's divine domicile, near the spot on the coast where Ariel and Eric had made their under and over the sea royal residence at Seaside. But right in the center was the grandest castle in all of Auradon, with lavish turrets and balconies, its highest towers flying the proud blue and gold banner of the good old USA, inside of the magnificent building were many ballrooms, great rooms and staterooms, a formal dining room that could seat hundreds, where everyone was made to feel like a pampered guest, and a wondrous library that held all the books that were ever written. This was all fitting, of course, because this was Castle Beast, home of King Beast and Queen Belle, the Seat of Auradon, 20 years ago, King Beast united all the fairy tale lands into one under his crown. And for the past 2 decades, he had ruled over its good citizens with strong and fair judgment, and only occasionally a tiny bit of his beastly temper. Belle had a calming influence on the hot-headed beast. She was not just the love of his life, but the pacifier of his moods, the voice of reason in a gathering storm, and the mother of his only child. The jewel in the crown was their handsome son, 15-year-old Prince Ben. There had been no fairies at his christening to bestow gifts, perhaps because he did not need any. Ben was as handsome as his father, with his strong brow and chisel-cut cheekbones. But he had his mother's gentle eyes and keen intellect. He was a golden boy in every way, with a good heart and a winning spirit. Captain of the tourney team, friend to all, destined to rule Auradon one day. In short, he was the very sort of person that the people of the Isle of the Lost despised. And, as on the Isle of the Lost, magic was no longer a factor in daily life in Auradon either. King Beast and Queen Belle stressed scholarship above enchantment, exhorting the young people to work hard instead of relying on fairy spells or dragon friends for help. Because Beast was the most powerful figure in all the kingdoms, when he proposed the new work ethic, nobody argued against him. It was indeed a new, once upon a time, for the people of the fabled fairy tale lands. But even without magic, life in Auradon was close to perfect. The sun always shone, the birds always chirped, and there was never more than a 5-minute wait at the DFMV, the Department of Formerly Magical Vehicles. And if everyone wasn't happy all the time, it's not as if this were heaven. Get a grip, people. Everyone was content. Except, of course, when they weren't. Isn't that always the way? The kingdoms vary short or fluffy or furry or minuscule, and sometime animal sidekicks were causing problems again. Sidekicks United, they called themselves, and they were far from happy. They were, in a word, disgruntled. Well, then, how can we help you today? Let's see. Ben wasn't talking to anyone but a piece of paper. Or 1,000 pieces. He stared down at the documents in front of him, tapping them with his pen. His father had asked him to lead the council meeting that morning, part of the training for becoming king in a few months. As was tradition, the firstborn child of the royal household would take the throne of Auradon at 16 years of age. Beast and Belle were ready to retire. They were looking forward to long vacation cruises, early bird dinners, and playing golf, Beast, bingo, Belle, and generally taking it easy. Besides, Belle had a stack of unread bedside readings so high, it threatened to topple over on a huffy Mrs. Potts when she came to take away the breakfast tray every morning. The complaint wasn't the only thing on his mind. Ben had woken up that morning from a bit of a nightmare. Or it felt like a nightmare. And it certainly looked like one. In the dream, he was walking around a strange village full of shabbily dressed, miserable people who ate rotten fruit and drank black coffee. No cream, no sugar, no coffee cake to dip in it. The horror! And he had fallen into some kind of ditch, but someone had helped him out. A beautiful, purple-haired girl who looked nothing like anyone in Auradon. "Thank you," he said gratefully. "And who are you?" But she disappeared before he could catch her name. He went back to the papers in his hand and tried to forget about her. Ben studied the Sidekicks United complaint, the first of its kind. And his heart beat a little faster at the thought of having to talk to all these people and convince them that there was no need for this level of discontent. He sighed, until a familiar voice interrupted his reverie.
Be careful about the sidekicks, son.
Sooner or later, they steal the spotlight. Ben looked up, surprised to see his father standing in the doorway. King Beast looked like he always did, as smiling and happy and fulfilled as on his billboards. All over Auradon, they read, "Good job being good. Keep it up. King Beast roars his approval." His father motioned to the stack of papers on Ben's desk.
"Looks like you're working hard."
Ben wiped his eyes. "Yeah." King Beast clapped his paw of a hand on his son's shoulder.
"That's my boy. So what is it they want, exactly?"
Ben scratched behind his ear with his pen. "It seems they're a bit upset, as they do all the work around here and are hardly compensated for their efforts. If you think about it from their perspective, they have a point."
King Beast nodded. "Everyone gets a voice in Auradon. Although you can't let too many voices drown out reason, of course. That's what it means to be kingly," he said,
perhaps a little more forcefully than was necessary. "If you keep raising your voice, my darling, you're going to crack all the china. And Mrs. Potts will never allow you either a cup of warm milk or a warm bath again." Ben's mother, the goodly Queen Belle, arrived in the room and slipped her hand under her husband's muscled arm. Yet another beastly quality the king still seemed to possess. The strength of a wild creature in the form of a mere man. She was as beautiful as the day she had come upon Beast Castle, and resplendent in a pretty yellow dress. If there were laugh lines around her eyes now, no one seemed to notice. And if anything, they only served to make her look more appealing. The second he saw his mother, Ben found himself more at ease. He shy and quiet, his mother gentle and understanding. Ben and Belle had always been two like peas in a castle garden pod, always preferring to have their noses in books rather than affairs of the state. "But half the castle staff has signed this petition. See? There's Lumiere's scrawl and Cogsworth's." His forehead wrinkling. Injustice of any kind was upsetting to think about, and it bothered him that the very people on whom his family depended to keep their lives in running order believed that they had cause for complaint.
"Lumiere and Cogsworth will sign anything anyone asks them to sign. Last week, they signed a petition to declare every day a holiday," his father said, amused.
Ben had to laugh. King Beast had a point. The fussy Frenchman and the jolly Brit would agree to anything so they could get back to their work. Chip Potts, who was known to make a little mischief around the castle, had probably put them up to it.
"That's the ticket. Listen to your people, but assert your right to rule. Lead with a gentle heart and a firm hand. That's the way to be a king."
King Beast extended his own fist, and Ben just stared at it. He gazed down at his own hand, which looked like a small child in comparison to his father's. Beast pulled Ben up by the arm, closing his hand around his son's.
"There. Strong. Powerful. Kingly."
King Beast's hand was so enormous, Ben found he could no longer see his own. "Strong. Powerful. Kingly," Ben repeated. Beast growled, then slapped his son on the back, almost sending him flying into the nearest decorative lamp. The floor shook as he strode out of the room, still chuckling. Queen Belle looked relieved. Beast was not above making a joke at his own expense, though he was much less forgiving when anyone else attempted the same line of humor. She put her arms around her son, drawing him close. "Ben, you don't have to be another King Beast. Just be yourself. It's more than enough." "That's not what Father says," Belle smiled. They both knew there was no use trying to explain away his father's logic, and she didn't try. "No matter what, your father and I believe in you.
That's why we wanted you to start meeting with the council. It's time for you to learn how to rule. You will make a wonderful king, all on your own. I promise.
I hope so, Ben said uncertainly.
I know so, Belle said, kissing his cheek. As the featherlight steps of his mother faded away, Ben took up his pen and turned back to his pages. This time, though, all he could see was his fist, with the same golden beast head ring that his father wore. Strong, powerful, kingly. He clenched his fingers harder. Ben swore he would make his father proud. Chapter 6 Mean Girl.
Well, you look very pleased with yourself, said Jay,
as Mal settled into her front row seat and propped her feet up on the desk next to her.
I am, she said. I just thought that little blueberry what it means to feel left out.
Carlos looked like he was going to have a cow when you told him he was hosting your party.
You mean a dog? Mal laughed, even though the joke was getting old.
Jay elbowed her with a wink before melting away to his desk in the back of the room. Mal was in a good mood. This class was her favorite. Advanced evil schemes and nasty tricks, taught by Lady Tremaine, otherwise known as the Wicked Stepmother. Mal was particularly fond of mean-spirited pranks.
Hello, you dreadful children, Lady Tremaine said, entering the room with a swish of her petticoats and casting a bored look at the class in front of her. Today, we will embark on our annual class project, Crafting the Ultimate Evil Scheme. She turned toward the chalkboard and wrote in ear-splitting cursive, The Cinderella Story, Once Upon a Broken Glass Slipper. As you all know, she said, as she turned back to the students, my manipulation of Cinderella was my greatest evil deed. For years I kept her in the attic and treated her as a virtual servant. If not for some horrid meddling mice, one of my daughters would be the queen of Charming Castle right now, instead of that ungrateful girl. And so, the goal of every teacher at Dragon Hall is to train the new generation of villains not to make the same mistakes we did. You must learn to adapt, to be faster, more cunning, and wickeder than ever before. You will spend this year working on an evil scheme of your choosing. The student with the best nasty trick will win Dragon Hall's Evilest of the Year award. The class nodded their heads in unison, each filling with a variety of ideas for awful tricks. Mal scratched her nose with the end of her purple-plumed fountain pen, wondering what her year-long scheming project would be. She looked around the room at her fellow students scribbling away on notepads, brows furrowed, some cackling softly under their breaths. Her mind was racing with horrid ideas, each more horrid than the last. Lock all the first years in the dungeon. Been there, done that. Fill the hallways with cockroaches? Child's play. Let a stampede of goblins loose in the slop hall? That would be just a regular Tuesday. Across the room, Mal heard a soft giggle. She looked over her shoulder to find that annoying new girl, Evie, chatting cheerfully with Carlos Deville as they played with some sort of black box on his desk. Ugh. That girl had nothing to be happy about. Why? Hadn't she, Mal, just told her she couldn't come to the Howler of the Year? Mal was slightly disconcerted for a moment, until she realized the evil scheme of the year was right in front of her. A twisted smile formed on her lips, and she chewed her fountain pen for a moment before scribbling a page's worth of notes. She would show that blue-haired princess a thing or two. Of course, she'd already told Evie that she couldn't come to the party
But that wasn't enough. It was too simple, too blunt. Mel had to be sneaky, like Lady Tremaine had been. Pretending to be working in Cinderella's best interests when she had been doing exactly the opposite. Mel realized that she'd been waiting years for this chance, whether or not she'd consciously known it. The memory of the lost invitation, if indeed it had ever existed in the first place, it was still unclear what had truly happened, grated on her feelings as sharply today as it had when she was 6 years old. A day like that can only happen once in 16 years. A day like that changes a person. A day like that was never going to happen again. Not if Mel could help it. And to be honest, Mel wanted to do more than ruin Evie's day. She wanted to ruin her year. On second thought, maybe keeping Evie out of the party was the wrong move. If Evie wasn't there, then Mel wouldn't have the opportunity to torture her to her heart's delight. Mel finished writing down her plans just as the bell rang and caught up to Jay, who was all cheer and charm. And by the time they reached the door, his pockets were full of much more than that. "Hold up," Mel said as she spotted Carlos and Evie coming toward them. Evie looked genuinely fearful, and Carlos wary as they approached Mel, who blocked the doorway. "Hey, Evie, you know that party I'm having?" Mel asked. Evie nodded. Yeah. "I was only kidding earlier," Mel said with the sweetest smile she could manage. "Of course you're invited." "I am?" Evie squealed. "Are you sure you want me there?" "I don't want anything more in the world," said Mel grandly and truthfully. "Don't miss it." "I won't," Evie promised with a nervous smile. Mel watched her and Carlos skitter away with satisfaction. Jay raised an eyebrow. "What was that all about? I thought you didn't want her there," he said, as he deftly stole a rotten banana from a first year's lunch pail. "Plans change." "An evil scheme, huh?" Jay waggled both eyebrows. "Maybe," Mel said mysteriously, not wanting to give anything away. It wasn't like Jay could be trusted. Thieves' honor meant neither of them had any. "Come on, it's me. The only one you can stand on this island." "Don't flatter yourself," she said, only half smiling. "Don't you hate parties? You didn't go to Anthony Tremaine's kickback the other week, and you missed my cousin Jade's scary 16th. "You were off the hook, as the pirate posse would say," he smirked. "Those were different. Anyway, you need to hop to it. Carlos can't throw my party alone." She grabbed his arm. "We need jugs of spicy cider, bags of stale potato chips, sparkling slop, the works." Jay peeled the banana and took a bite. "Done. And make sure it's the good stuff from the wharf from the first boats. I've got a reputation to uphold." He saluted and tossed the banana peel on the floor, and they both watched gleefully as a fellow student slipped and fell. Things like that never got old. Mel smiled, her green eyes glittering a little more like her mother's than usual. "Let's go. I have a party to throw. And someone to throw it at." Chapter 7. Hellraiser. Carlos never shied from a mission. And if Mel wanted a howler, there was no alternative but to provide one. There was nothing he could do about it, AP evil pensioned or not. He knew his place on the totem pole. First things first, a party couldn't be a party without guests, which meant people. Lots of people. Bodies, dancing, talking, drinking, eating, playing games. He had to get the word out. Thankfully, it didn't take too long for everyone he crossed paths with at school, and the minions of everyone they crossed paths with, to spread the word. because Carlos didn't so much issue an invitation as deliver a threat. Literally. He didn't mince words, and the threats only grew more exaggerated as the school day wore on. The rumor spread like the gusty, salty wind that blew up from the alligator-infested water surrounding the island. "Be there, or Mao will find you," he said to his squat little lab partner, Le Fou Du, as they both dissected a frog that would never turn into a prince in unnatural biology class. "Be there, or Mao will find you and ban you from the city streets," he whispered to the Gastons as they took turns stuffing each other in doom ball nets and P.E. "Be there, or Mao will find you and ban you and make everyone forget you. And from this day onward, you will be known only by the name of Slop," he said, almost hysterically to a group of frightened first-years gathered for a meeting of the Antisocial Club, which was planning the school's annual foul ball. They turned pale at his words and desperately promised their attendance, even as they trembled at the thought. By the end of the day, Carlos had secured dozens of RSVPs. "Now, that wasn't too hard," he thought, putting away his books in his locker and releasing the first year who had been trapped inside. "Hey, man," Carlos nodded. "Thanks. I really have to pee," squeaked the unfortunate student. "Sure," Carlos said, scrunching his nose. "Oh, and there's a party. My house. Midnight." "I heard. I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it," the first year said, raising his fist to the air in excitement. Carlos nodded, feeling mollified and more than a little impressed that even someone who'd been trapped inside a locker all day had heard the news about the party. He was natural. Maybe party planning was in his blood. His mother certainly knew how to enjoy herself, didn't she? Cruella was always telling him how boring he was because all he liked to do was fiddle with electronics all day. His mother declared he was wasting his time, that he was useless at everything except chores, and so maybe if he threw a good party, he could prove her wrong. Not that she would be around to witness it, though. She'd probably be enraged to discover her hellhole crawling with teenagers. Still, he wished that one day, Cruella could see him as more than just a live-in servant who happened to be related to her. He made his way home, his mind a whirl. With the guests secured, all he had to do was get the house ready for the blessed event. And that couldn't be too hard, could it? A few hours later, Carlos took it all back. "Why did I ever agree to have this party?" he agonized aloud. "I never wanted to have a party," he raked his fingers through his curly, speckled hair, which made it stick up in a frazzle, a lot like Cruella's own do. "You mean tonight?" a void echoed from the other end of the crumbling ballroom, from behind the giant tarnished statue of a great knight. "I mean, ever," sighed Carlos. It was true. He was a man of science. Not society. Not even evil society. But here he was, decorating Hell Hall, which had seen better days long before he'd been born. Still, the decrepit Victorian mansion was one of the grandest on the island, covered in vines more twisted than Cruella's own mind, and gated with iron more wrought than Cruella's own daily hysterias. The main ballroom was now draped in the sagging black and white crepe paper and partly deflated black and white balloons that Carlos had pilfered from a sad stack of dusty boxes stashed in his building's basement. Those few boxes stamped DeVille Industries were all that remained of the former DeVille fashion empire, the merest scraps of a better life that had long since faded away. His mother, of course, would be furious when she saw that Carlos had gotten into her boxes again. "My stolen treasures," she'd scream. "My lost babies." But Carlos was a pragmatist and a scavenger. Why his mother had ever been obsessed with black and white Dalmatian puppies, he had no idea. He was terrified of those things. But she had been prepared to own 101 of them. So there was a lot of stuff to scavenge. Over the years, he'd repurposed more than a few empty crates. Scientists requiring bookshelves as they did, abandoned leashes, nylon withstanding the elements as it did, and unsqueaked squeaky toys, rubber repelling electricity as it did, that had fallen by the wayside when his mother's plans were foiled. An AP evil scientist and inventor like Carlos couldn't afford to be choosy. He needed materials for his research. Why did you agree to this party? Easy, because Mal asked you to. Carlos' second best friend Harry said, shaking his head as he wiggled his fingers, tape dangling from each one. Maybe you should try for your next invention to build something that would free us all from her mind control. His third best friend, Jace, tried to take a piece of tape, but only succeeded in taping himself to Harry. Yeah, right. No one can stand up to Mal, said Jace. As if. Harry, Harold, and Jace, Jason, were the sons of Horace and Jasper, Cruella's loyal minions, the two blundering thieves who had attempted to kidnap the 101 Dalmatian puppies for her and failed miserably. Just like their fathers, Harry and Jace tried to look like they were more capable and less nervous than they actually were. But Carlos knew otherwise. Harry, as short and fat as his father, could barely reach to fasten his side of the ebony streamer. Jace, taller even than his own tall, scrawny father, didn't have that same problem, but as previously mentioned, couldn't manage to figure out the tape dispenser. Between them, they didn't exactly constitute a brain trust. More like a brain mistrust. Carlos wouldn't have chosen them as his friends. His mother chose them for him, just like she did everything else. They're all we've got, Cruella would say. Even when we have nothing else, we'll always have... Friends? Carlos had guessed. Friends? Cruella had laughed. Who needs friends when you have minions to do your bidding? Cruella certainly ruled Jasper and Horace with an iron leash. But one could hardly say that Harry and Jace did Carlos's bidding. They only seemed to hang around because their fathers made them, and only because they were all scared of Carlos's mother. Which was why he considered them only his second and third best friends. He didn't have a first best friend. But he knew enough about the concept of friendship, even without having any proper ones of his own, to know that an actual best friend would have to be able to do something more than follow him around, tripping over his feet and repeating his not-worth-saying-the-first-time jokes. All the same, it was good to have some help for the party, and it was Harry who nodded sadly at him now. If Mal doesn't like this party, we're doomed. Doomed, echoed Jace. Carlos surveyed the rest of the room. Every piece of broken-down old furniture was covered in a dusty white linen cloth. Every few feet of plaster wallboard was punctured by a crumbling hole that revealed the plywood and plaster underneath. The overachiever in him bristled. He could do better than this. He had to. He rushed upstairs and dug out his mother's antique brass candelabras and rigged them up around the room. With the lights off, the candles glimmered and flickered as if they were floating in midair. Next was a chandelier swing, a staple at any aisle party. Or so he'd heard. He had Jace climb up a makeshift ladder and tie a rope swing to the light fixture. Harry jumped off from one of the sheet-covered couches to test it out, which caused a cloud of dust to settle over the whole room. Carlos approved. Kind of looked like a fresh snowfall had been sprinkled over the hall. He picked up the rotary phone and called his cousin Diego DeVille, who was the lead singer in a local band called the Bad Apples. You guys want a gig tonight? Do we ever? Heard Mal's having a full moon howler. The band arrived not too long after, setting up the drum set by the window and practicing their songs. Their music was loud and fast, and Diego, a tall, skinny guy who sported a black and white mohawk, sang out of tune. It was marvelous. The perfect soundtrack for the evening. Next up, Carlos took out an old-fashioned instant Polaroid camera he'd found in the attic. He fashioned a private booth by removing the sheet from a couch and rigging it on a rod in a secluded corner. "Photo booth, you take their photo," he said to Jace. "And you hand it to them," he told Harry. Carlos admired his handiwork. "Not too shabby," he said. "Now we're talking." "And it's about to get a whole lot better," said an unfamiliar voice. Carlos turned to see Jay entering the room, holding four huge grocery bags filled with all manner of party snacks. Stinky cheese and withered grapes, deviled eggs, so appropriate, and wings, sinfully spicy, and more. Jay pulled a bottle of the island's best spicy cider out of his jacket and dumped it into the cracked punch bowl on the coffee table. "Wait, stop. I don't want things to get out of hand," Carlos said, trying to grab the bottle and cap it. "How did you get your hands on all that sugar?"
"Oh, but that's where you're wrong," Jay said, grinning.
"Better your party gets out of hand than Mal gets out of sorts." Jay sank to the couch, putting his combat boots up by the punch bowl. The minion shrugged, and Carlos sighed. The guy had a point. As the clock struck midnight, Mal's guests began to arrive in force. There were no gourd-like carriages or rodent-like servants to be seen, not anywhere. Nothing had been transformed into anything, especially not what anyone would consider a cool ride. There were only feet, in varying degrees of shoddy footwear. Perhaps because their feet were the largest, the Gastons arrived first, as usual. They never risked a late entrance so as not to miss a buffet table full of food they might swallow whole before anyone else got a taste. During the awkward silence that followed the Gastons head-butting their hellos and competitively slamming pitchers of smuggled root beer, a whole ship's worth of Harriet Hook's pirate crew came marauding through the door. As Carlos stood against the faded wallpaper, nursing his spiked punch, the Gastons and the pirate posse busied themselves with chasing the next group of guests through the house. This happened to be an entire cackling slew of evil step-granddaughters, festooned with raggedy ribbons and droopy curls, elbowing their way around the corners at top speed. "Don't chase us," they begged. Just waiting to be chased. "You're horrible," they screamed, horribly. "Stop," they said, refusing to stop. Their cousin, Anthony Tremaine, followed them into the room, rolling his eyes. The band struck up a rollicking tune. Dark-haired Ginny Gothel arrived with a bushel of wormy apples, and a game of Bob for the Wormiest Apple broke out in the tub. Everybody wanted to turn on the chandelier swing, and the rest of the guests were engaged in a serious dance-off over by the band. All in all, it was shaping up to be a wicked good time. More than an hour after the party had officially started, there was a sharp knock on the door. It wasn't clear what made this knock different from all the others, but different it was. Carlos leapt to his feet like a soldier suddenly called to attention. Jay stopped dancing with a posse of evil step-granddaughters. The Gastons looked up from the buffet table. Little Sammy Smee held an apple between his teeth questioningly. Carlos steadied his nerves and opened the door. "Go away," he yelled, using the island's traditional greeting. Mal stood in the doorway, backlit by the dim hallway light in shiny purple leather from head to toe. She appeared to have not so much a halo as a shimmer, like the lead vocalist of a band during a particularly well-lit rock concert. The kind was smoke and neon and bits of sparkling nonsense in the air. Carlos half expected her to start belting a tune with the band. Perhaps he should have felt excited that such an infamous personality had decided to come to his party. Or her party.
There would be no unplugging this party like one of his rebuilt stereos. Not once it had begun. Especially not the sort of party Mal seemed to have in mind.
"Hey, Carlos," she drawled. "Am I late?"
"Not at all," said Carlos. "Come in."
"Excited to see me?" Mal asked with a smile. He nodded yes. Except that Carlos wasn't excited. He was terrified. Somewhere, deep down, he even wanted his mommy.
Chapter 8. Only Human.
"Toad's Bloodshots!" declared Mal, leaping into the room as if she were just another guest. For everyone. And just like that, the party began again as quickly as it had stopped. It was like the entire room exhaled in one relieved breath. Mal isn't mad. Mal isn't banning us from the streets. Mal isn't renaming us slop. Not yet. Mal could